To appreciate the wonderful strangeness of nanotechnology and molecular engineering, it helps to know two things. First, that atoms are the building blocks of matter. Everything from potatoes to computer chips and from brains to galaxies are made up of zillions of them. Atoms usually come in clumps called molecules. It also helps to know that atoms are really, really tiny. So tiny, in fact, that if you took an orange, for example, and expanded it to the size of planet Earth, the atoms in that orange would have grown only to the size of cherries. Nanotechnology pioneers hope to manipulate matter on that atomic or nanometer scale.
The word nanotechnology itself derives from the word nano, which means dwarf. And in science, nano means a billionth. A billionth is 1/1000th of a thousandth of a thousandth.
That's Ralph Merkel, a nanotechnology theorist at Zyvex, a Texas-based nanotechnology company. He admits that nanotechnology presents some awesome technical challenges. Still, this emerging science has one simple premise.
Nanotechnology is based on the fact that manufactured products are made from atoms. The properties of those products depend on how those atoms are arranged. If you rearrange the atoms in coal, you get diamonds. If you rearrange the atoms in sand and add a pinch of impurities, you get computer chips. And if you rearrange the atoms in dirt, water, and air, you can get potatoes.
Mr. Merkel likens the atoms in diamonds, computer chips, potatoes, and everything else to the building blocks in Lego, the popular construction toy that uses small bricks that snap together to create larger structures, like toy houses or toy cars, or even make-believe parent-eating monsters. Similarly, enough atoms put together fast enough and in the right way using nanotechnology can create real houses or cars, or potatoes, of course. There's nothing exotic about arranging atoms. As Mr. Merkel points out, we already do it, albeit in crude ways, every time we build or manufacture anything.
If you look at how we arrange atoms today, we arrange them in great untidy statistical heaps. It's as though nature gave us a Lego set, but we have boxing gloves on our hands. We can scoop up the Lego blocks in great untidy heaps, but we can't arrange them the way we want. Nanotechnology will let us take off the boxing gloves and arrange the fundamental building blocks of nature in exactly the way we want.
The possible uses for this technology seem to belong in a science fiction novel, until one realizes how useful they can be in the real world. Dr. Krieger is a futurist and software designer with a sort of multidisciplinary background in mathematics, physics, and information science that is common among nanotechnology pioneers. He invites us to imagine a new nanotechnology kitchen appliance designed for vegetarians who refuse to kill, but who love the taste of meat, nevertheless.
You can have a machine that's been jokingly called the countertop beast, which produces just steak. It builds it at the molecular level, and it's, you know, chemically and structurally identical to steak, but it was never part of a cow. It's just extruded from this machine that takes in elements from the air, water, carbon, oxygen, nitrogen, and hydrogen, the basic chemicals that make up everything we eat, and constructs beefsteak or whatever kind of food you want.
If they do become reality, inventions like the countertop beast would have immediate positive effects on the environment. It takes many hectares of land, thousands of liters of precious water, and many tons of grain to raise a cow made of DNA. But the materials in a virtual cow, built molecule by molecule in a nanotechnology lab, are as plentiful as dirt and air. Don't scoff, says Ralph Merkel, who reminds us that nanomachines already exist all around us.
We can look at the world, and the world is covered with living organisms, living molecular machines, and these demonstrate that the basic principles involved in molecular machines couldn't contradict any fundamental law of physics.
Again, Mr. Merkel uses potatoes as an example.
Potatoes are a miracle of modern biology. They have tens of thousands of genes which make tens of thousands of proteins and complex and intricate molecular machines. Yet we think nothing of mashing this miracle with a little butter and eating it. This is because potatoes don't cost much, and they don't cost much because a potato can make another potato. Self-assembly. This is a remarkable phenomena in which the parts literally assemble themselves. In the future, we should also be able to make machines that can make copies of themselves.
Given the tiny size of atoms, it could take centuries to build up anything as comparatively huge as a potato, using only one atom at a time. But nanotechnology manufacturing will mimic the way biology builds things. Biological nanotechnology uses millions of specialized molecule-sized living machines to assemble cells according to design instructions encoded in a life form's DNA. Random variations in the genetic sequence help explain evolution. Artificial or man-made nanotechnology would also use molecules. However, the blueprint would be designed by human intelligence and modified through human choice and experience. Because both natural and man-made nanotechnology build with atom-sized parts of almost unimaginable smallness, both must also build nanomachines that assemble the nanomachines that actually make their final products. Charles Owen, distinguished professor of design at the Illinois Institute of Technology, explains why.
There's no way you can build small machines in enough numbers to make even the simplest useful product by yourself. It has to be done by small or nano-level machines acting as replicators or assemblers. So how you do it? Well, you have to have something that will make something, and that something will make some more somethings. You have to make billions of anything to make anything worthwhile.
But how to keep track of those billions and trillions of individual molecule-sized somethings, much less control where they move, when they move, and what they do? That's no problem if you've got nanocomputers, according to Mr. Merkel. He says that radically enhanced computers will be one of the first benefits of the new technology.
We could make a computer the size of a sugar cube more powerful than all the computers in the world combined today. The way we do this would be to build molecular switches and molecular wires and arrange those molecular switches and wires in the complex patterns of a modern computer. That would give us a remarkably powerful computer with components literally the size of molecules.
Professor Charles Owen is clearly excited by the connection between molecular computers and the nanomachines they'd be programmed to control.
So if you can put computing power that small and connect it to lots of little machines, let's say they can do things like move things backwards and forwards and move things around like rotational things such as motors and gears do at our scale. You can imagine that we could have a lot of functionality down at a level where we can't even see it.
The medical usefulness of these nanomachines can be readily seen. Eric Drexler, one of nanotechnology's leading scientist visionaries, has invited us to imagine a fleet of nano-submarines injected by the billions and trillions into the bloodstream. These molecule-sized engines of healing, fueled by the body's own stores of oxygen and glucose, and driven by atom-sized propellers, could be programmed to search the body for unwanted fat deposits, toxins, or hostile bacteria and destroy them. But it can get even stranger than that. Again, Professor Owen.
It's conceivable that we could devise a machine, very small, that could go into a human cell and take a look at the DNA and decide whether or not there was a need for a repair of the cell or destruction of the cell. For example, a cancer cell. If you have a cell that's irreparably damaged, what you could do is simply take it apart to its basic compounds. You can then go through the normal body processes for elimination. Well, right away, that suggests some wonderful things. It means we ought to be able to eliminate cancer, for sure, and we also ought to be able to eliminate a lot of other debilitating diseases that way.
But nanocomputers might enable us to locate and cure entirely new diseases as well. Here's how. First, program a nanocomputer to recognize the genetic blueprint for a healthy cell. Then, send nanomachines out into the body to compare the actual cells it encounters with that ideal. Any deviation would be considered evidence of disease. The nanocomputer would then release other nanomachines back into the affected tissue with instructions to rearrange the faulty structures until they conformed. Enthusiasts sometimes cite a continuum between what they call wet nanotechnology, which concerns itself with living or once living systems like cells and soft tissue, and so-called dry nanotechnology, which involves the design and manufacture of new physical materials. Charles Owen of the Illinois Institute of Technology says that throughout history, designers have been constrained in what they can make by their choice of materials, the physical properties of those materials, and by the manufacturing process itself.
All of a sudden, with nanotechnology, we're going to a situation where things can literally be anything we want them to be. We've lost all those normal constraints that kind of keep us honest, so to speak. If I can design materials that can be as strong as I wish, that can change literally from being solid to gaseous or liquid at the choice of some sensors and some intention that I put in, if I can change color, I can change texture, I can change form, I can really do anything.
The truth is that a world where nanotechnology is commonplace might appear very similar to the one we inhabit now, until we interacted with it. Imagine a chair, for example, that appears to be made of wood. It might seem humdrum until one realized it was actually composed of trillions of minute nanoscale computers, sensors, and flexible machinery that allow it to alter its shape based on the body type and the preferences of the sitter. Alas, sugar will still cause dental cavities in the future, but nanotechnology will permit fillings for teeth to be made of pure diamond, which will never decay or wear out. Simply take coal or some other carbon-based material, rearrange the atoms into a lattice-like pattern, and drill. But it is nanotechnology's potential for space science and exploration that most excites Al Globus, a research scientist at the NASA Ames Research Center in California. He says that nanotechnology will allow us to build spaceships from aerospace material that is stronger than diamond, but much lighter than what current-day space shuttles are made of.
And these ships should be able to reduce the cost of bringing things into orbit, in particular people, radically. So instead of $10,000 a pound, perhaps we can get down to $10 a pound or $5 a pound. The space shuttle on the pad, you know, with fuel, weighs millions of pounds, and it can take, you know, 7 to 10 people into orbit. With nanotechnology, we could build a 3-ton rocket that could take 4 people into space.
In the short term, Mr. Globus says, this would permit the development of an educational and profitable space tourism business. Pleasure trips into high orbit or even to the moon could become commonplace.
And if we can do that, we should be able to develop space colonies, literally colonize the solar system and have billions or even trillions of people living in orbit, along with, you know, the plants and the trees and animals and so forth. By far the biggest thing that had happened since life dragged itself out of the oceans onto the land.
Nanotechnology also holds great promise for our understanding of consciousness and the brain. If we can map and ultimately even build that most complex of machines, atom by atom, we may be able to solve basic questions about the way we think and understand reality, and how the mental and the physical worlds are related. With nanocomputer capability, it may even become possible to download human minds and personalities into one's computer. Indeed, a quantum leap in our ability to map and navigate the vast inner terrains of consciousness and the mind is for many the most interesting of nanotechnology's many potential benefits. Ultimately, it's clear even to non-poets that nanotechnology promises to reach into realms of fundamental historic and evolutionary significance. Chris Peterson, president of the Foresight Institute, a Palo Alto, California think tank devoted to nanotechnology and its social implications, is quite comfortable taking this long view.
what we're talking about here are advances in how our species supports itself physically. Originally, our species were hunter-gatherers. We lived directly off the land. Then we learned how to begin to harness nature. That would be the agriculture. Then we began to learn how to harness technologies involving machines. That would be the industrial age. Now we're moving to a more advanced form of control over machines. And so this is a pattern we've been following for millennia.
Unfortunately, history shows that human progress in physical comfort and security has always been accompanied by better weaponry, and this would almost certainly be true with nanotechnology. A well-versed terrorist could create an airborne germ with a 100% fatality rate that could spread worldwide. Or he could design a plastics or metal-eating organism to render conventional defensive weaponry useless. Ms. Peterson adds that while nanotechnology has the potential to eliminate hunger, disease, and environmental pollutions, there would surely be great social dislocations as well.
That is, in fact, one of the reasons that we founded the Foresight Institute, was to attempt to grapple with these things. It's important that, for example, the media go to the researchers and ask questions about, well, what will this mean? We want the researchers to understand that, yes, there's an upside, yes, there's a downside. This is not a small thing. This is a very big thing, and this is coming within our lifetimes.
Actually, the first man-made nanomachines have already been created. Engineers have made gears which use single atoms as teeth. And researchers at Cornell University have made an electric guitar the size of a blood cell with strings less than 100 atoms wide. A fun way to experiment with an altogether serious emerging technology. For Our World, this is Adam Phillips.